Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. One of the biggest biotech battles of the century is heading to court. Three federal patent judges will hear oral argument tomorrow in a heated dispute over a gene editing technology known as CRISPR. With us now to tell us more is Carrie Goldberg, host of WBUR's Common Health blog. Hello, Carrie.
Hello, Meghna.
Okay. So before we get to the legal battle, which is a big, huge, important one, let's first of all remind us, what exactly is CRISPR and why should we care?
Okay. So CRISPR is an acronym. Let me tell you compulsively that it stands for Clustered Regularly Interspaced Short Palindromic Repeats, but that doesn't matter. What matters is that CRISPR is a technology that makes it much, much easier to tweak genes in all kinds of useful ways. And it's widely hailed as really a major revolution in biology. It's been sweeping labs around the world just in the last 3 or 4 years or so, and it's already spawned a bunch of well-funded biotech companies that are aiming to use CRISPR to do everything from curing genetic diseases to making better crops.
Okay, so the analogy that I've heard most often used with CRISPR is that it acts something like molecular scissors to cut up bits of genome.
Yes, the scissors is often used, although my favorite analogy is that it's kind of like going from an old-style typewriter, for anyone who's old enough to remember that, where you had to use whiteout. It was a very laborious process to fix mistakes. So now this is more like a word processing program that lets you seek out the spots that you want to change, sort of like when you use, you know, Control F for find or Command F in a word processing program. And then you can change the things you need to change much more easily before. CRISPR is actually even called a gene editing tool.
Ah, so like a find and replace, right?
Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay.
Exactly.
So obviously valuable technology.
Very, very valuable. And the rights to that valuable technology are very disputed. And that's what this case coming before the patent court outside Washington, D.C. tomorrow is all about. So it's a really complicated case, but to reduce it to the simplest possible outlines, it's basically like an East Coast, West Coast dispute. And the East Coast element is here in Cambridge. It's the Broad Institute of MIT and Harvard, which is this big genomics juggernaut. You know, like it's a leading research center on gene science and DNA, and specifically the work done by one stellar young scientist, Feng Zhang.
Okay, and then the West Coast element?
And the West Coast element is Berkeley. It's the University of California at Berkeley, and the researcher there, the lead researcher, is Jennifer Doudna, who's also known as totally stellar. She's a major pioneer of CRISPR.
So this is like a biotech version of an East Coast, West Coast hip-hop battle.
Right, or a rap battle.
I don't mean to make light of it. I mean, obviously, this is a major, major issue, a serious thing, but I just couldn't help it. But the question before the patent judges is what? Basically, who invented CRISPR?
Well, actually, bacteria invented CRISPR.
Okay.
So they use it in nature as part of their defenses against viruses. And there's actually been work on CRISPR going back many years by many scientists, including even in the yogurt industry. So it's a long history. But the question before the patent court is ultimately, yes, you're right. Who gets the credit? Who gets the right to license CRISPR for all these promising new uses that are exploding?
Okay. And the reason why this matters is money, right? Because, I mean, what? It would be a licensing issue. Anytime someone uses CRISPR, they'd have to pay or something like that.
If you use it commercially. Yeah,
I see.
Right.
But it's not as straightforward as looking to who filed the first patent on CRISPR?
Right. It's tricky because some of the, I don't want to get into the weeds, some of the filings were expedited or faster, some weren't. And the arguments tomorrow are part of what's called an interference, which is a process the U.S. Patent Office uses when more than one party claims to have invented the same thing. So the court will be trying to determine who invented this thing first, not who filed first.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the judges then, they could decide whether, you know, Cambridge and the East Coast wins, or whether Berkeley and the West Coast wins, or both? Could that be an outcome?
Could be one of those Solomonic decisions, or the sides could settle, although that seems unlikely. So I spoke with Professor Paul Gugliuzza. He's an expert on patent litigation at Boston University School of Law, and I asked him which side he would bet on if he were a betting man.
I would not bet on the outcome of this case. Determining who is the first to invent can be very difficult. It requires the judges to sort of sift through mountains of documentary evidence, like lab notebooks, the results of experimental tests, draft manuscripts from journal articles and other things like that.
So that's why I will also not be talking about the details of this case with you. And he also says that generally the judges consider testimony from the inventors and other witnesses. So because the whole thing depends so much on specific facts and details, the outcomes of a proceeding like this are notoriously unpredictable.
So young scientists out there listening, your lab notebooks are so important.
Keep those lab notebooks.
Right. Okay, well, let's back up a little here, Carrie, because I'm curious why this dispute has even come to this place, to a court of law to begin with.
Right. Well, and Guglielmo says it's because, you know, when a technology promises to be extraordinarily valuable, that's when you're likelier to get an interference case like this. He says the patent office gets about 500,000 patent applications a year, and it only declares about 50 interferences like this.
So what's so different then about this patent fight?
It's just there's so much at stake. It's so rare that a new technology is as buzzed about as CRISPR is, as celebrated, and the potential is looking huge. And, you know, this case, it's clearly costing millions and millions in legal fees, but Guglielmo pointed out that these interferences often are great big fights, and they can last years and years.
The case that I use to teach my students about interferences was a priority fight between Bristol-Myers Squibb and the University of Texas involving a method to identify cancer-fighting drugs, and it took 16 years for that interference to be resolved, and that's not unprecedented. Another famous interference involving a patent on polypropylene lasted 30 years.
So we might want to settle in for the long haul here, Meghna. And here's the weird little twist, that the outcome of this big fight does matter, of course, for what happens with CRISPR, but it's not going to be very relevant for future cases because the law has already changed. So for things that are invented today, the patent is no longer given to the first person to invent it, but to the first person to file a patent application, which is, of course, much easier to determine. So interference proceedings like tomorrow's are going to fade away within years, and that's probably a good thing.
Right? First person to file, like, but not the first patent to be approved? I mean, oh, so many questions, so many legal details.
There.
Okay, I'm not going to get us distracted about with that. That's a future conversation. I mean, in the meantime, though, is this a huge fight? And is it taking away resources from either of these institutions that could actually be used for advancing science?
Right. It's a painful question. And, you know, as much as we might relish watching a good fight, maybe it does seem unfortunate. I asked Guglielmo about that.
Patents are all about striking a balance between providing incentives for innovation and also making sure that the technology is widely available. Right? So we want to make sure that those who invest in developing technology, as these universities undoubtedly have, are able to recoup their investment through exclusive rights for a limited duration. But one might certainly look at a dispute like this, where the parties have reportedly spent over $20 million in legal fees, and reasonably wonder if it's impeding rather than promoting the progress of science.
So, again, it's a painful question. It reminds me a little bit of the recent election where people are saying, wow, this doesn't usually get this ugly, you know. But one nicer aspect is that although there's been some sniping back and forth, these leading scientists have really stayed above the fray. And I think that's a great thing. Like, I really want them just sticking to their lab benches and churning out their brilliant work.
But others are weighing in, though, right?
Others are weighing in, including here on Radio Boston back in April. Eric Lander, the head of the Broad Institute, was on. And though he wouldn't comment specifically on this patent case, but he did speak about a controversial piece that he wrote recently in the journal Cell that traced the history of CRISPR. And critics called out Lander. They said that he highlighted the role of Broad Institute biologist Feng Zhang and that he downplayed the contributions of the Berkeley biochemist Jennifer Doudna. Here's what he said on our air in April.
I thought it was really important to send the message that no scientific discovery is the work of any one or two or three scientists. It's usually the work of an entire community coming together over the course of decades.
Which is undeniably true, right, Meghna? Like, scientists all stand on the shoulders of the scientists that came before them, and more than ever, they work in teams, right?
Right. And I have to say, there are critics of Lander who say it's disingenuous to say that because potentially billions of dollars are on the line here.
Yes. So it is also undeniably true that the Broad Institute has a dog in this fight. In fact, it is a dog in this fight. So you know how they say history gets written by the victors, and the history of CRISPR is still being written. as we speak and as the patent office deliberates.
Well, we'll stay up to date on how those deliberations go with the help of Carrie Goldberg, host of WBUR's Common Health blog. You can find a link to her post about the CRISPR patent battle, the East Coast, West Coast biotech throwdown, I'm going to call it.
I like it.
That link is at our website, radioboston.org. Carrie, thank you as always.
You're welcome.
Back in a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.